You're listening to Monday Night's Arena. Writer Jan Carson is a good friend of Arena. She was on most recently on the show in the Where Do I Begin slot to talk about her heroine, Agatha Christie. Jan is the author of The Firestarters and has just published her new book, The Last Resort, a collection of linked short stories set in a caravan park on the northern Irish coast, where the residents are beset by driving rain, boredom and a series of impossible thefts. Jan Carson joins me now. Jan, you're very welcome to Arena again.
Thank you.
The Last Resort, as I explained, is a series of short stories all set in a very wet February weekend in a caravan park in somewhere in the Northern Ireland coast. This is a scenario that is very familiar to a lot of people in Ireland. Can you tell us a little bit about the inspiration for the collection? Was there a similar caravan park you knew well?
Well, first of all, I really love caravans. I'm just absolutely fascinated by them. I think the smallness of them, the way everything folds up and turns into something else. And as a child, we often went up the north coast to Portrush or Portstewart or Ballycastle, where this collection is set. And as you mentioned, invariably, it always lashed for the whole time. So you had to make your own fun up.
Now, the Seacliff Caravan Park, which is the setting for the stories, has really its best days are behind it. How could you describe it for us?
Yeah, it's a very small caravan park, and I'm very quick to say it's not based on a real one in case I never get back invited back to Ballycastle again. I think it has about 24 caravans in it, big statics, and it's mostly older people who go there now. So it has, as you said, seen its best days, although it's got a very loyal contingent of folks who've always gone to Seacliff for their holidays.
Now, as I said, The Last Resort is a collection of short stories. Is that right to call it a collection of short stories? Because it works as a novel, with each story furthering our knowledge of all the residents of what's happening in the caravan park.
Yeah, well, it was originally written for radio, so each episode had to stand alone as a kind of little mini story, but also add to the bigger story. So it could be, you could call it a linked novel or a linked set of short stories. I'm quite happy for you to call it whatever you want, as long as you read it.
All right. Well, will we just dig into a few of the characters? One of my favourite characters is Richard. I suppose if you were to pick out a most saintly character, it's Richard. What is he up to in his caravan?
So, yes, Richard's kind of an odd character because he's got a very odd caravan. I don't want to give too much away, but there is a magic realist element running through this novel, and Richard has begun to let people stay in his caravan, and he's kind of surprised as to just how many people you can fit into a static caravan when push comes to shove. He's quite an interesting character, and he's a bit baffled by what's going on himself.
Now, there's also a lot of humour in The Last Resort, like this line, for example, when Malcolm says, "First time a girl turned me down, I went out of the disco and lifted two parked cars." Did you have fun creating characters like Malcolm, who is an aspirational Uri Geller type?
Yeah, I tell you, one of the loveliest things about this was the freedom to write in my own accent where I'm from. I'm from Ballymena direction, and characters like Malcolm, he's from Cullybaggy. And I just loved bringing in that kind of local humour that I grew up with. I think sometimes Protestants get seen as being a bit dour, but actually there's layers upon layers of sometimes quite dark humour, but they can be really dry and funny like Malcolm is.
Yes, because Malcolm, aspires to be as great as his famous brother, but it doesn't seem likely he has got other impediments getting in the way of being the practice professional he needs to be.
Yeah, absolutely. If he could, I think he himself is his own worst enemy, if you know what I mean. But he does keep trying to practice his magical gift the whole way through.
So caravans, as we know, are things that should be moving. There's wheels on them, so they're transport. But they're very much stuck and unconnected to automobiles in this caravan park. And in many ways, that is a reflection on the residents. They're all stuck in their own particular way, aren't they?
Yeah, and I guess it was a very much a book that was written during lockdown. So I wrote it in very quickly in 6 weeks, and I was aware of how we were all stuck. Caravans are also about being compartmentalised. You're kept away from community, but you're also in a way thrown very close together, maybe closer than you are at home. So I wanted to use the caravan as a kind of extended metaphor there, and perhaps even a metaphor for where we are in Northern Ireland. I think, sometimes we don't progress as much as we could in Northern Ireland, and it can feel a bit like being in a static caravan endlessly.
Yes, because the legacy of the Troubles is ever present with these characters, literally and metaphorically stuck in the past. Is that what you were suggesting, that it's a metaphor for Northern Ireland, where they're stuck at the moment, kind of moved on so far and can't make further steps?
Yeah, I think, there's the legacy of the Troubles that circles around these connected stories. There's also Brexit's in the background. It begins with the caravan's caretaker, Pete, who has had aspirations to go travel and see Europe and be an artist, and then suddenly Brexit has happened. So there is a sense of, I do feel, growing up in Northern Ireland, we were making pretty good progress and things were changing and it felt really positive. And right now, it feels like quite a static moment. I think a static caravan might be a really good metaphor for where we are in the north at the minute.
Yes, indeed. And going back to the one of the last times you were on the programme when you spoke about Agatha Christie, there's also a whodunit aspect to the stories. And one of the characters, Alma, is the 11-year-old daughter of another character, Lewis. And tell us a little bit about Alma. She's with her two siblings stuck and bored in this caravan park, but she's got a mind of her own in what she thinks might be going on in the car park.
Well, I have been living by myself during lockdown, and I'm afraid I've been writing a lot of first person monologues that are very much like me, and Alma is just mini me. She has aspirations to be Poirot, and she sets out to solve this crime of all of the robberies that are happening across Seacliff, and she's absolutely obsessed with Agatha Christie. So the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree with Alma.
And you're going to read a section from Alma's story.
Yeah,
from The Last Resort, Jan.
I'm going to read the first two paragraphs here. It'd be easy to push somebody over that cliff. It's so crumbly. You can make it look like an accident. I can think of at least three different times Agatha Christie killed somebody by shoving them off a cliff. If my iPad wasn't gone, I'd Google to see if there were more. I'm raging about losing my iPad. Now I have to run my investigation the old-fashioned way, snooping around, observing suspects, taking notes on my jotter. Maybe it's better like this. Poirot never looked anything up on Wikipedia or checked suspects' alibis on Facebook. If Poirot was here, he'd say, "Forget the iPad, Alma. Use your little grey cells." I'm doing my best. I'm watching everyone. Even Mum. It's always the person you least suspect.
Jan Carson there, reading from Alma from her collection, The Last Resort. You talk there about your love of magic realism and how you've used magic realism in other books, maybe since your first book, really, Malcolm Orange Disappears. And again, there are elements, you were talking about the caravan that Richard owns, and then there are other magic realism aspects in the novel or in the collection of stories. What does magic realism bring to the stories, do you think?
I think for me it does a number of things. So the first thing it does, it stops you in your tracks as a reader and makes you think about things differently. So when it comes to Northern Ireland, the story has been told quite a number of times and quite often in a similar way. And to use images from magic realism and the fantastical, it often arrests readers and just upsets them and makes them think again. And the second thing that I'm really enjoying using magical realism at the minute is exploring my own Protestant identity and Protestant community in Northern Ireland. Just as I'd mentioned before, there's a sense sometimes that, we are seen as a little dour and a little lacking the fantastical, magical kind of side of things. And I want to use the fantastical there to show people that, there is stuff worthy of celebrating in the Protestant community and Protestant heritage, and it might not necessarily be the things that people know about us. So that's been quite fun to play around with as well.
Yes, because we've talked about that. I think you talked about it with Sean fairly recently about this whole new generation of Northern writers, be they from either the nationalist or the Protestant loyalist community. And you feel that their approach to subject matter is very different.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. I'm writing a paper on magic realism in Northern Ireland at the minute, and magic realism tends to come from post-colonial places in the world because it challenges the dominant Western narrative, which is realism. And so it's possibly quite interesting that, you know, as we look at the UK changing and the nature of what Ireland looks like changing, that there are possibly more of these magic realist voices beginning to appear in the North, challenging that kind of dominant set realist idea of what history is and what has happened here. I think it's quite intriguing. And I've been, even some of our new young poets like Stephen Sexton, I think, has a real magic realist bent to what he's writing about. And Damien Smith's English Street is absolutely infused with magic realism. So there's more here than I thought as I begin to kind of scratch at the surface of it.
At the form again, you said you wrote it in this form because you were asked to write it for BBC Radio 4, and playing with form, you're no stranger to that. In fact, you're known to some as the postcard woman.
Yeah, that was one of the things I did during the first lockdown. Was I wrote, I think I ended up with about 150 of them, so 4 months worth of short stories on the back of postcards every single day.
Right, and what kind of a story can you put on the back of a postcard?
Well, I've got very small handwriting, so I can get about 360 words in, and I guess you'd call them microfiction, probably. We actually released another second collection of postcard stories there at the end of August with the Emma Press, so they've proven very popular with people who've got a short attention span at the minute, which I think is a lot of readers.
And you also work in the community as an arts facilitator, and you've curated festivals like the C.S. Lewis Festival and the Hillsborough Festival of Literature and Ideas. I mean, would somebody like C.S. Lewis, and he's kind of, I don't know if they called it magic realism then, but he's fantasy elements. Would he be somebody who would have influenced your work?
I'm going to be really honest. I don't really like C.S. Lewis's writing very much.
Oh, tell us why.
Which is probably why I'm not curating the C.S. Lewis Festival anymore. A lot of his stuff trips very much right into the out-and-out fantastical, and I've never been drawn to fantastical worlds like Narnia or Tolkien's worlds. I love the juxtaposition of the, you know, reality with a touch of something magical that happens, because I think for me, it makes me question and look for the magical moments that are happening in our everyday. You know, that when you go out the door, there might be something fantastical or wonderful or miraculous that
we don't have to dig in behind the wardrobe to find something.
Yeah, you don't have to go to Narnia. You can just walk down the street, Newton Arch Road.
Right. And what about the C.S. Lewis fans? Were you able to have those discussions during the festival?
Oh, yeah, we had some very robust discussions about I've enjoyed some of his non-fiction writing. And I think he's a fantastic writer as well as a fantastical writer. It's just not particularly to my taste. But you learn, you learn so much from reading everything. Read outside your own genre. I think possibly that's where you learn the most, when you're reading things that you don't particularly enjoy.
Now, in the pause between now and next is something else you're involved in. What is that, Jan?
So this is a monologue which I was commissioned to write for the Irish Arts Centre in New York, just in the middle of lockdown. And it has now been developed by Rhiannon Jeffries and the Lyric in Belfast as a filmed theatrical piece. And it premieres next week at the Lyric. So you can buy a free online ticket and see it, as we can't go to theatres at the minute, but we can see it on our screens.
That's right. It's called In the Pause Between Now and Next, and will be premiered on April the 6th. And tickets are free and available from the irisharthcentre.org. Jan Carson, thank you very much. Jan's collection is called The Last Resort. It's published by Doubleday Ireland on this Thursday, the 1st of April. Jan will be taking part in the West Cork Literary Festival on April the 6th. That's westcorkmusic.ie is where you book.